Welcome to Interpod, a podcast by Interpride where the world comes together for the LGBTQIA+ community. I'm Michelle Miao, your host. In this episode, we recognize TDOR, or Transgender Day of Remembrance. TDOR was started in 1999 by advocate Gwendolyn Ann Smith as a visual to honor the memory of Rita Hester, a transgender woman who was killed in 1998. The visual commemorated all of the transgender people lost to violence since Rita Hester's death, and so began a very important tradition that has become the annual TDOR, or Transgender Day of Remembrance. Our guest in this episode is Suzanne Ford, Interim Executive Director of San Francisco Pride, who is leading the organization with a majority trans-led board. Suzanne touches on the issues of racism and white privilege as we recognize those we have lost to senseless violence and hate in 2022.
My name is Suzanne Ford. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm the Interim Executive Director of San Francisco Pride. The first time I ever directly shared with another human being that I actually was a trans woman was in this house, my wife. And I was, I think, 46 years old. And she said, "Do you want to be a woman?" And before I could police myself, I said, "Yes." I said, "Yes, I am." And so that was the first time that I really, really came clean ever. But I had known forever. I'd known since I was maybe 5 or 6 years old. I knew. I grew up in Owensboro, Kentucky, like a city of 50,000 people in Kentucky. And I grew up in the 70s. I was born in 65. So I started going to school in like 1971. So, you know, very rigid society with about gender roles, especially. And we were separated from a young age, boys and girls only. That's the only way it could be. And I had that pang of being left out. I would be sent to the garage where all the men were drinking and working on race cars, fighting. And the women would be inside the house. And I knew where I'd rather be. But I had to learn how to, fit in, and I had to learn how to protect myself out in that garage out there with men. And so I, you know, I was an athlete from a young age, and I kept the attention off me because I was one of the boys picking the teams. And so no one would ever question me about my gender or my sexuality. And I kind of made this badass to protect myself. And I was out there acting like one of them.
When did you realize, when did you know just being you could mean violence, could mean death?
I don't know if I knew that it was violence or death yet, but I was probably 5. I was across the street from my house. I mean, I lived in a subdivision with a million kids, and there was a house across the street, and it was all girls. They had, I think there were 4 of them, and they were around my age. And I was playing with them back in their bedroom, and they had put a dress on me, and I was so happy. I was thrilled. And their mom came back there, and she reacted horribly. She was quite upset. She said, "You have to go home right now, take that dress off and get out." And so the last time I was home, I parked my car at in front of my house and just looked, and I thought it was so far away, but it was not that far. It was, you know, the life seems smaller now, but I remember every step walking out of their house to go to my house, because I knew she was going to tell my mom. I knew I was in a lot of trouble, and I knew we make sure no one knows.
Tell us about TDOR.
Shortly after I came out, my friend Nilani, who's just kind of guided me through this journey, someone who identifies as non-binary and trans, she took me to my first TDOR event. And I think it was at the SF LGBT Center. And my friend Nilani is a person of color. And I went, and I didn't really, I just knew I was going to something to belong to. I I knew what the event was about, but when they started reading the names of, you know, mostly Black and brown trans people who had died the preceding year, Nilani had to leave and ran outside. And I realized, like, oh, you may be a trans woman, but you may not get the full impact of this. I've never forgotten that. And I have a certain amount of reverence. And I know that whatever work I do, I haven't experienced that in my life. And I probably won't, according to the odds. I might have someone be mean to me, but I'm probably not going to face physical danger. And until that stops, then I shouldn't be too happy with the place where we are as far as trans acceptance. You can't be if we're still reading those names, then we've got a problem.
We do. This year alone, we're still experiencing double digits, the average amount of transgender women of color who have died due to murder and violence here in the United States averages between 30 to 50, at least in the last few years. And every year we try to come up with an answer. How do we address this? And I think in a lot of ways, we're doing that within our own community and we're learning how to keep ourselves safe. But let's talk about society's problems. I mean, you come from a state like Kentucky, which are trying to pass some of the most horrific anti-trans bills affecting youths. Give us your thoughts about the problem the United States faces when it comes to the transgender community and violence. And what do you think? How do you think we need to address it?
Well, I think it starts really early, especially in the South. You know, the underpinnings of the South is based on toxic masculinity, you know, obviously racial issues. There's a division of people from a young age. We're policed. People are aware we exist now. They cannot pretend we do not exist. So as more of us have become more visible, I think fear is what's going on in the South. All that legislation is around fear that we're going to, that trans people are going to be the thing that brings it down. So then you see this legislation, especially against trans children, and it breaks my heart.
One thing I thought about, the significance of trans joy as well. While we think about the lives that have been lost this year, particularly for TDOR on Sunday, I also think about the more and more we put trans joy out there, trans leadership, trans equity, trans people just living their lives like to the fullest, and people seeing that also is extremely important. That could be part of the solution. So I see your leadership at San Francisco Pride as part of that. And I see that the organization being made up of good number of, trans people for the first time in history, which I believe.
Yes.
Is very important.
Yeah, it is definitely important. I think a lot of those new members of the board, they're young trans people and trans people of color. And I think if you polled them, they would have said that Pride wasn't a place they really felt like they belonged. They would be an afterthought. They might go to some functions peripherally, but Pride was not a place they felt like they belonged. And now those same people are guiding policy, making sure that we are welcoming of trans people, making us be accountable. And I think that's exciting. I think it's difficult. And it's calling for self-reflection on our part that was needed. When I was named the first transgender executive director of Pride, we sent that press release to the Owensboro Messenger and Inquirer. And they called me and asked me why it was important. I said, because I want some trans kid in Owensboro to know that there's hope. That you could be who you're supposed to be and you could have a big life. And I did not have that.
We have enough allies now, at least in the United States, to address what I consider an epidemic. This is ongoing violence against the transgender community, especially transgender women of color.
Right.
A two-part question. What do allies need to do?
I think allyship has, you know, greatly increased. But how many Black trans people, trans men and trans women and Black non-binary identified people how many of them lead organizations? How many of them own thriving businesses and get to make decisions about resources? I think allies have got us to a point where, and I see it all the time in the trans community, where we're all fighting over this small amount of resources. We're not actually the ones creating wealth or allocating power. We're always the ones asking for it. And until we get there, I think you've seen that in the white lesbian and gay communities. They now set at the levers of power and they create wealth. And so that, you know, you can see different outcomes. And we're way behind in that respect, and especially trans people of color, I think. And I think that's that leads to a responsibility for especially white trans women like me. There is a cultural phenomenon in the, a lot of white trans women like me are late transitioners. We hid for whatever reasons. I'm not apologizing, but I do know I owe a huge debt to Black trans women that were out as young people. And I accumulated some resources hiding. Us white trans women, especially, we've got it. We've got to make sure that we're doing the work to make sure that we're sharing resources, that we're sharing access.
The second part was, what do we need to do? Not just our allies, but what do we need to do to save, even if it's one less Black or brown trans woman next year when we come back around TDOR? I mean, part of TDOR is also remembering folks that we lost, right? Yeah. And never forgetting them.
You know, I see it. I see it from these people that are board members, you know, from the trans community or other trans people that I met. You know, I'm 57 years old now. You know, I come from the recovery world where there's a model of sponsorship and I think mentorship, and it filters down. I see people that I mentor in the trans community that mentor younger trans people, and they just to make sure that they know that they're worthy. I think a lot of the problem is we put ourselves in bad situations because we're not worthy of treating ourselves well. We're not worthy of being safe. We're not worthy of avoiding certain circumstances. And I think I watch it. I think it's happening in the trans community. I think we know that, you know, people outside the community can't do that. We can, though. And I think for a while we were just struggling with our own survival. But the trans community is resilient. And I think you're seeing more and more and more. We understand that we are responsible for making sure that 16-year-old trans kid knows that they are beautiful, valuable, worthwhile, that they could have a very fulfilling life as who they are. When you know that, maybe we don't get the same outcomes. I hope. I mean, I don't think we can ever eradicate the hatred of trans people because we're different. And you know how this white world we live in hates different. We're always going to stand out as different.
Thank you so much, Suzanne. Before we end the episode, here's Shea Diamond from our 2021 interview for TDOR and her single, Smile.
I'm Shea Diamond. My pronouns are she, her, and goddess. I didn't see anyone like me that was telling their story, who was this underdog, who was dark complected, who was trans, you know, who was Black, who was fat, you know, and just didn't fit into society's standards of what beauty was. So it was important for me to see someone like me. So I know it's important for other kids who may not be the popular ones, may not be the prettiest to society standards, may not, you know, have things, you know, like given to them. So, you know, people like us, we have to work harder. It's apparent. It's the way it's been structured. So my whole entire story, as far as my incarceration, I was hoping that it would deter the youth from trying to go that route, because there's a lot of pressures, and especially with societies and their standards and the gatekeeping that goes on, people like us feel, we kind of feel hopeless. And so to fight against this system that has kept us down for so long, all of these systems, the family dynamic, the industrial complex, it's just, I feel like that's what music should be. It should be giving you hope. It should inspire you. And I wanted to put all that into my music, not to just make music to make you dance to, but music that made you think, music that made you understand someone else's experience, music that got you to see that we all just trying to get equality.
Breakdown. I'ma start it with a breakdown. 10 years in a lockdown. Now I'm looking at lakes now. I dry my tears with Obex and lyrics. Not trying to hear it. Stop messing with my spirit.
Thank you so much for joining us for this special episode recognizing TDOR, or Transgender Day of Remembrance. To listen to more episodes of Interpod, head to interpride.org, and from there you can find more information about what we do, especially about our scholarships and grants, our World Conference, and even World Pride. This is Michelle Miao for Interpod, a podcast by Interpride where the world comes together for the LGBTQIA+ community.